This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. We are live here inside the MDN studio. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass. Ed Fang from the PowerRing.com is part of the MGo Blog Roundtable, is back here in the house. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Was he gone?
Back here for another week.
I mean, we're
back.
All right. Yeah.
He's been gone the last 6 days. Hasn't been here.
Yeah. Brian Cook back here in the house for another MGo Blog Roundtable. How you doing? Yeah.
Hello.
All right. And Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham on the other side here. I bet you guys didn't know that Craig is, his name was Odell in another life.
Yeah.
Odell this morning.
That is a slur against Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham was not handing out singles.
Hey, like I said, my bank account hit three figures this week, so I figured I could hand out a few singles to you.
Yeah, he came in here spreading out ones. And Brian said, so you want me to dance for you now?
Yeah, which is not something that I typically do. I want to be clear about that.
Not you usually don't dance for dollar bills.
I mean, nobody's really asked.
But I'm thinking about it.
Oh, man. So at any rate, yeah, comedy is LSU saying that, yeah, we thought it was fake money.
Yeah, I thought it was Monopoly.
Yeah, we thought it was fake money. Of course, until Joe Burrow said, yeah,
bucks.
I took real money. A guy who wore a $2 million watch in the game is going to be walking around with fake money. That makes a lot of sense. Anyway, guys, let's dive right in. Let's start with the latest, the most recent news, and that's last night that Anthony Campanelli going to the Miami Dolphins. Your thoughts?
I mean, that's a weird move because it's a position coach. They were like the worst team in the NFL last year, weren't they?
No,
they were terrible, but they weren't quite as bad as
people thought they were.
Like the Lions, for example.
So like you don't really have much job security. I don't think you're getting paid like at the DC level. So it's just like turn down two DC jobs, stay at Michigan, and then go to Steve Ross's team. Like Steve Ross should be going out and hiring, I don't know. Ryan Day.
But I doubt if Stephen Ross had anything to do with this.
Right. That's the whole problem.
I think it gets to the point. I think by the time it gets to that point, I think Jim, and now this part I am really speculating on. By the time it gets to that point, he's like, you know what? Go. Because the Giants came showing interest before that. And I was told by a few sources that Jim blocked it. So I can only assume that there was like a courtesy from the Giants to say, hey, we're interested in your guy, and Jim wasn't with that because he's running the race to keep Campanelli. He's prioritized him. He has him. I'm not about to be like, yeah, go on and do this after I spent all this time, to keep you. And when he comes right back and says, okay, well, I want to check out the Dolphins. Now, if he even said that, and at that point, the guy really doesn't want to be there. You just let him go. That's how I assume it went down.
Yeah, I would assume the same thing. I mean, it seems like he was I have to believe he was pretty miserable here because I think Michigan up the ante, too,
but
didn't they?
If he was miserable, he would have taken BC, right?
Yeah.
If he was miserable, he would have taken Rutgers.
It's just weird.
Unless it's weird. The weather.
But it's the NFL, man. Don't some of the people
it's
in coaching circles.
See, he wanted to get as far away from New Jersey as possible.
Or as possible, he wanted that Giants. When the Giants came, he really, really wanted that Giants thing. And then when that got the kibosh put on it, it's like, the next thing that comes, I'm just going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's
that could be. Again, that part is just total speculation. How do you arrive at the Dolphins? I think it's maybe a byproduct of the Giants thing not working out.
I don't know. This keeps happening, though. Like, the Brady guy for LSU immediately went, he was at LSU for 1 year. He does that. And, like, he has a future in front of him where he is a golden god and is LSU's head coach for 30 years. It's like, nah, gotta go back to the NFL. And then, John Beilein, that was the dumbest decision of John Beilein's life. Like, his players hate him. He has no chance of ever having a team that is anything other than a first round and out. Because he's not going to get a free agent.
Right, because this first Michigan team was great, too, right? Oh, yeah, I don't think it was the great.
Yeah, because it's the exact same as
so, I mean, college, I guess NBA. You got to look at what is he prioritizing, though, when he takes that job.
Exactly. What
a
on
new
earth
challenge
could it be
in his life.
Yeah. I think,
new challenge. Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love. can he get through one basketball season without these two dudes murdering him?
Those guys.
He watched like the game with the most dangerous game where it's like, and he's like, I really want to be the guy who's being hunted. Fine, but that is the only reason.
Or he's a guy that is in a job that where the demands of it.
Nah.
Are,
he got frustrated because he didn't expect Poole and Iggy to leave, and he pulled the trigger on a bad decision.
I think that was a part of it for sure.
No,
do you think he's happy today?
Do you think he wakes up in Cleveland, Ohio, with Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson?
I think he walked into the situation with his eyes wide open. I call it the Pistons a train wreck. This was worse than that. They were twice as bad off as the Pistons were, and yet the stress of the job is dealing with Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love a huge headache. Sure, but he doesn't have to recruit. When he punches the clock at the end of the day, the clock is punched. When there is an off season, he can actually head up to Walloon Lake and be there for the entire offseason and not just a week or two at a time.
So, like, his deal is this is his retirement game.
This is his retirement. So he gets a chance to try. Absolutely.
Guys.
Absolutely. He gets a chance to try the NBA. He's going to get more money. He doesn't have to recruit. Yes. This is his retirement.
If you're an ambitious person like John Beilein, you are always interested in the next challenge. Zip it. You're always interested in the next challenge, and you're at an age in the NBA where some of these teams will stick with coaches. I mean, Brett Brown's still coaching the Sixers.
I don't think it's just that. I think there are other circumstances.
I'm sure the challenge in the NBA was definitely a thing.
But the health factor, the less stress. I think was a big part of it too.
Do you think John
and of course being disenchanted with college
you
basketball?
You think John Beilein wakes up and be like, "Oh my god, I got to deal with an NBA player today. This is the worst thing that's ever happened in my life."
I think he looks at it. I think he looks at his checkbook. I think he looks at the
his
off
checkbook.
Time. Yeah. And sees that it's going to be even better off with less work. Yes.
So you think he's just demotivated by money then?
No, I didn't. Didn't I just talk about the health concerns?
He didn't say that.
I think he looks at his health book. I think he looks at his health and the less amount of stress. I think he looks at the fact.
So this is just like I can get some money out of Dan Gilbert and go on vacation.
I think at this stage of life, to not have to recruit and then recruit your own roster over again, I think that's a big deal for him, a big part of why he decided. And then, of course, being disenchanted, another factor, being disenchanted with college basketball, looking around and seeing, oh, there's an FBI probe. Who do they get?
Nobody.
Oh, a bunch of shoe company guys and some assistant coaches. Yeah, man, I think there are a few things that were wrapped up in his decision to leave.
Before he left for the NBA, he had conversations with the guy at the Celtics, Brad Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
And Stevens
told him to go.
There's a big difference between going to the Celtics and going to the Cleveland frickin' Cavaliers.
But Cleveland's still going to be a better thing than Detroit. That's like mediocre but not bad enough to get the first pick in the next draft. There's advantages there. You're going to dump Kevin Love?
Hey, look, the Cleveland Cavaliers from a roster standpoint is a bad situation.
It will always be a bad situation.
The Sixers were a bad situation four years ago, too.
Here's a guy that at this stage of his career is going to get a shot to build a team. If it doesn't work out, he got a big payday, and he's a retirement age anyway.
Yeah,
In the offseason, he gets an actual offseason.
Brian,
he doesn't have to fly to Germany to recruit a guy.
Brian is getting more paranoid than me. I mean, Brian. Yeah, you are. You think that he's going to end up at Indiana.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely in it.
Oh, you think John Beilein's coming back to college?
Yeah, and he's going to go to Indiana.
He's going
to
get, like...
See, that's even crazier than my idea.
Like 62 games deep in this season.
I think this is his last thing.
So one of his players is going to attack him with an axe. Archie Miller's getting fired. We can agree.
John Beeline has a wife.
A wife who lives in Ann Arbor.
And they still live in Ann Arbor.
Who is? I'm very, very sure. If I know when I went home last night and didn't hold my kid once, my wife let me have it.
So when John Beline, how old is your kid?
Noah is 5 months.
Okay. How old is John Beline?
But I'm saying when this opportunity came up for the NBA and he had a chance to go and not have to recruit. To actually have some off time, to actually have an off season, I'm pretty sure that his wife said, look, this is less stress. Let's do this.
Is it really that much less stress?
Yes.
You know, the one thing that sort of undermines that is John Beline is an icon in Ann Arbor.
I guess when you're going like 10 and 72, then there's not a whole lot of stress.
No.
But I
if it doesn't work out, what is... John is what? 65, 66. Yeah. If it doesn't work out, you just got a huge payday. You gave the NBA a shot, retire. Yeah. If you want to, maybe you go back to college, but I doubt it. Just retire.
I mean, how much stress was there really here? John Beline was an icon in Ann Arbor. He was even an icon among in the Big Ten to a large extent. Everybody liked him. Even referees liked him.
The stress to maintain. The stress to maintain what he built. is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I said before, you know, recruiting is a 365-day-a-year thing. And now you add to it, you got to recruit your own roster. And not just guys going to the NBA, JP, but now you got to think about the transfer portal. It's like, man, you know, it doesn't stop. Maybe if it was just that, and I didn't have to think about, now I got to recruit. I got to continue to recruit against guys that there are definitely no consequences for. You got the FBI coming in. The FBI came in. We got these guys dead to rights, and they still skate.
All right.
I think all of that played into his thinking.
Yeah. All right.
Well, so, I don't know.
I don't think he has any regrets. I don't think he will ever go.
I think because I don't think he'll ever. He hasn't talked about it really, and I don't think he'll ever talk about it.
So. I don't think John Beline has any regrets. Yeah. Even with all of the things that the guys on that roster working against and trying to undermine them are putting them through.
So boring. It's like, all right, well, we have no chance of doing anything.
Says the guy who doesn't follow pro sports.
I mean, like, but like, if you're going to, like, okay, well, like, what's the best case scenario for Cleveland? They win 20 games this year. Like, what's
long-term
like,
picture? Think about where the Sixers were four years ago.
Show up to work and be like, oh, God. Oh, yeah. The Sixers. That's a good comparison for Cleveland's situation.
They're going to have some high picks.
Yeah, they're going to have some high picks in the worst draft to have a high pick in.
It's not the only draft they're going to have a high pick in. They're going to have a high pick for some years. Right,
4 years from now, is John Beilein still the coach?
Hey, maybe not. But if he's not, he gave it a shot.
He gave it a shot.
He wanted a shot at the NBA.
That's like saying I coached the Lions, so I was an NFL coach.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. You were an NFL coach.
I have a different opinion about that.
Yeah, for someone who doesn't follow pro sports.
Technically. Yes, I've heard of them, though. I know about them.
By the way, the Lions should draft Tua, put him on the injured reserve.
Oh, geez, Craig.
Tank the season. And don't play Stafford. Go 0-16. Pick Lawrence next year.
You've already said this one.
I did this on air?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Never mind.
I thought you were just doing it for effect.
Like I just forgot. I'm older than John Beilein, a lot older. I don't remember stuff.
This whole segment is stuff we've already talked about.
You blew us up. I mean, Brian took us on a tangent, but you know, it can have a segue into basketball where we will talk strategy. We will talk defensive strategy. Right. It's going to be very much front and center, no pun intended. When the Wolverines take on the Iowa Hawkeyes again, and what will the strategy be when it comes to dealing with Luka Garza, especially when you have to take into account that the Garzettes are going to play much better than they played here in Ann Arbor. I mean, Wieskamp has been playing much better ball. He was the driving force behind the Maryland win. I mean, what do you have, 26 in that game?
Yeah, he was good.
He's not going to give Iowa a 7 spot versus Michigan and Carver Hawkeye. He's going to be better. I think it makes it even more important to at least, I mean, can you at least keep Garza under 30? Can you at least keep him under 30? Can he not explode? We'll get into all of that, start talking some basketball when we return. here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA The Ticket. So unfortunately, as we talk Michigan basketball, they have been on the receiving end, fellas, of some career high scoring performances. Unfortunately. Now,
like all five games in the Big Ten.
Now, fortunately, though, all those games haven't resulted in losses. Like, you know, there are some statistical models or strategies that say you let that guy go off, the other guys aren't going to beat you. That actually worked against Iowa the first time around, as Luka Garza goes off.
I mean, did it? They scored 91
points.
but again, Michigan won the game, and my recollection was they did so quite comfortably that, yes, yeah, Iowa went off, but Michigan was never really threatened in that context.
But it wasn't, the defense didn't have much to do with that. I mean, it was the fact that we played good offense, and Iowa has
56-55.
And Iowa's dreadful on defense.
Okay, so I guess my point is no one else did anything. He went off. Mm-hmm. Whatever they wanted to say about hey, you know, playing that guy and, you know, or guarding other guys straight up, not helping off of them and letting Garza go off, it worked in the final analysis. They won the game.
Yep.
But as you move away from home, you look at the analytics driven strategies against Daniel Oturu or Cassius Winston, for instance.
Or Coburn or Trevion Williams. Trevion Williams has scored in his first 16 games this year, was in double figures six times. And he put up 36 and 20 rebounds.
Yeah, so there was nothing in the numbers that to suggest that Trevion Williams was going to do that.
Right.
Well, there was something in the first half numbers.
True. Okay, so that's where I'm going with this. So it is very clear that Juwan Howard is super into analytics. That is like his thing. And Tim McCormick makes this point all the time. Coming from the Miami Heat, that's how he was. Sure. That's how he was brought up.
That's great.
But as you get in the war, as you get in the battle, and Trevion Williams is doing his thing, is going to work, or Daniel Oturu, didn't he score 20 of his points? I think it was like 20 in the first half.
He had 30.
When he's going off, you know, shots, just kind of deviating from the plan and saying, hey, you know what, guys, we're going to try something different. We're going to run something different at this guy to kind of disrupt him. That's the part that I think we need to see and are going to see moving forward, hopefully, sure, starting with the Iowa game. Curious what you guys think.
Well, so analytics on the NBA level is one thing, and analytics in college where players can be a lot more variable is another. So the Purdue game was especially frustrating because they play Nojel Eastern and Aaron Wheeler for a ton of minutes, and Nojel Eastern is 0-3 from 3 on the season, and Aaron Wheeler is shooting 22%. So, like, if that's not a situation where you feel like you can help,
right?
Like, what is a situation where you feel like you can help?
Yeah, I was thinking in the Minnesota game, help off everybody except Kalscher.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, Carr's like a 31% three-point shooter. They might get some looks. But also, like, Michigan is running a defense that statistically is fairly similar to what they were doing last year, but they're worse at everything. And the thing that really kind of jumps out is they're like in the 300s and turnovers forced. And I think and last year they were in like the 220s or whatever, and that's fine. Yeah. But the rebounding's also worse, so they're the worst team in the Big Ten at shot volume.
Yeah. Well, what's very clear is that what they hold as the highest priority is limiting three-point attempts. They limit three-point attempts at all costs.
But I think there's an evolution to that, because what the Bucks ended up doing was they're like, all right, we're going to eliminate three-point shots, but we're going to absolutely eliminate corner threes, but we maybe will give you like a top-of-the-key three if your guy's 34% on average. And I think that maybe, hopefully, is the evolution that we'll see from Juwan, right? I mean, we've already talked about this. It makes a lot of sense. So not everyone can shoot, and there's more, like Brian said, there's more variability in college. But I also wonder if, you know, Juwan, you know, I think there were these stories of Coach K his first year. His team was terrible. And he, I don't think he won his first 3 years at Duke, which I don't think is possible in this day and age. But, you know, he wanted to instill an attitude knowing that he was going to get better players coming in. And I wonder if that mentality is kind of playing something Because let's face it, John Teske's not a good post defender.
All right.
Wait, did you hear the pregnant pause there? I heard the pregnant pause. All eyes on Craig Ross.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, last year, he was unbelievable.
So I actually...
But
he was playing in a completely different... I mean, personally, I can't stand drop defense.
Mm-hmm. But that's
and,
not...
But I don't... Yeah, go ahead.
The problem is the fact that he gets one-on-one on the post, and now people are eating him up.
Yeah.
And last year, that was not the case. He went one-on-one. I mean, Michigan didn't help on Ethan Happ. Michigan didn't help on Bruno Fernando. Yeah. And he fought those guys to a standstill. Like, Happ was 9-19 in one game.
Yeah,
he only got over, like, 100 O-rating.
Happ having a pretty good
He
game
only got
in one of those
over
games.
100 O-rating in one game because he had 7 assists, which is not on Teske. So, you know, the... If you go back and you look at all of the bigs in the Big Ten who you could say are top-level guys last year, there was one guy who got him in one game, and that was Luka Garza at Carver-Hawkeye. Every other game where he's getting zero help, he's doing very, very well. And then you come into this season, and people are just lighting him up.
And I think that's what – I think it plays into – you know, it's a big part of why I think Juwan's head is where it is with Teske and X.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are your two vets, your two leaders, and two guys who have established themselves as really good defenders. And so you have a great deal of deference to that on the floor. I'm going to say, X, you got to D up Peyton Pritchard. You got to D up Peyton. And I feel like it's going to happen. Eventually, X is going to D up Peyton Pritchard, and it didn't happen. And Teske, you know, you're going to go man-to-man against Coburn. You're going to go man-to-man against Trevion Williams. You're going to go man-to-man against Oturu, thinking that at some point that it's going to match up with what he was last year. And unfortunately, it hasn't, which is why, hey, you got to adjust. You got to adapt. Yeah. And that means that maybe you got to run some help, you know, to whoever it is, Teske, toward whoever it is John is guarding right now.
You know, Teske had 8 points early in the Purdue game, and then Purdue just doubled him out of the offense. You know, and they didn't win that game because they couldn't shoot, but, like, the ability to do it had been baked into Purdue's defense, and then they forced usage to other people. And on Michigan's team, you know, that's not a huge win. But, like, for Iowa, for especially Minnesota, you got to force usage to people who aren't the best player on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, okay, the level of shots that they're going to get in a – NBA context where it's pretty even throughout the league might be worse. But in college, where you got like Bakari Evelyn out there who won't take a shot in any circumstance whatsoever, like you need to take advantage of the holes that other teams are presenting you and force the best player to take a step back.
The other thing is, I wonder if the data is a little bit of a flat earth theory is applied. Because if you look at the Big Ten this year, 3-point shooting is way, way down. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers in Big Ten games, and teams basically in the 20s, and only maybe two teams that are more efficient from three than two at this point, and we haven't played those teams. And so, and I think it's Northwestern and somebody else, but we haven't played, I don't know. But the reality is, against Michigan right now, teams are shooting 27.5% from three. And, you know, 54% from two. So, I mean, we should be given, you know, I'm not sure that giving up twos at this point is a way to win games.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that doesn't work out from an efficiency point of view. And so I agree with Brian that things have context. It's not just the broad brush of numbers as to what threes are made in the NBA, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on in the Big Ten? What goes on with Purdue? Purdue can't shoot the ball. They got one guy who can shoot the ball, Stefanovic, and Eli did a good job on him.
And Michigan actually ran, you know, late in the Purdue game, they actually ran a couple double teams at Trevion Williams. Like, wow.
Late
Eureka.
In the game, yeah.
Eureka, right?
And they were.
You know, they actually have. But, you know, the other thing, and Tim McCormick brought this point up as a big man himself, who has been in, you know, has faced a similar circumstance where he's, you know, you're in a matchup where a guy is just giving it to you. And he said, look, you know, I worry about even as a senior, you know, you when you get gotten like that by that many guys, does it start to work on your confidence a little bit? He said, even for a senior, that can happen. And he went into great detail on the Michigan Basketball Insider this week. And be sure to check it out wherever you get your podcast. But I think there's something to that, too. You got to, you got to be mindful of affecting a guy. I mean, that was it was a journey to the confident Teske that we've seen here, you know, the prior 2 years. I mean, they had to build him up to that. And so you don't want to have a regression based on this bludgeoning from, like you said, you laid it out. I mean, it's like every guy. It's like, you know, good grief.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's even seen Caleb Wesson yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, Xavier and Teske are taking much more responsibility on the offensive side. So they're the two highest usage guys on the team, whereas they were like role players last year, right? And there's only so much energy you can spread around. I mean, I think that's part of it, that we haven't seen this team. I mean, basically, this team has slid on defense and has gotten better on offense, or at least compared to expectations.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think we're actually going to see. I mean, Juwan, after the Minnesota game, seemed like he was like, no, I'm looking at this. We are absolutely not, you know, married to one way to play. Mm-hmm. Now you got several data points, right, that says,
right,
you know, we need to try something to kind of take some of this pressure off of John.
Well, the number one data point to me is that right now Michigan is the worst defensive team in the Big Ten. Number 14 in Big Ten games.
Yeah, but that's small sample size.
Small sample size, 3 of 5 games, you know, but still, it's what's happened.
I mean, if you look at the season and just strength of schedule, they're very average on defense right now in the Big Ten. And they're, you know, top three on offense. And I think that's the way they want to play this year.
I mean, not having Isaiah hurts. Hurts. I mean, there's no question about that. And I think perhaps everyone underestimated how valuable...
No. As soon as that happened, I was like, well, there's... And that Michigan State game is gone.
Yeah, on defense, and obviously on offense, but on defense too. I mean, you think about, you know, a guy who has the versatility to guard multiple positions. He's the one that you have.
Yeah, Michigan's on-off splits with Livers are huge. So he's worth, I mean,
yeah,
0.2 points per possession when you take out the guarantee games.
Is that on offense?
No, like overall.
Overall, okay. Because obviously on offense, if you're taking a guy who's hit half of his threes,
well, and then, I mean, you think about even in the Minnesota game, all the good looks, the open looks that they missed. You know, did you make a few more of those?
We gotta talk about playing Eli Brooks less, I think.
Yeah,
I
mean, let's go to the phones. Talk to Eric in South Carolina. Eric, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, Sam? What's going on, guys?
What's up?
Hey, now you know me and Brian joked about this over the last 5 years, saying that Michigan needed to get more athletic at the five spot. I think teams just got film on John Teske and they realize he can't jump higher than 6 inches.
I mean, I think that there might be a little bit of something to that in that.
Me too.
Teske was closer to his ceiling last year than Daniel Oturu. Like, Oturu is a beast this year, and Teske's, you know, he's doing a little bit more in the post, but like athletically, he's not on the same level. So there's certain things that, you know, the Oturu can get better at that Teske can't keep pace with.
Sure. But I think part of what we've seen from like what I think John Teske is best at is moving his feet, hedging ball screens. He was elite at that. I've never seen a 7'2 guy do that.
Me neither.
And now we're not taking advantage of that.
How many post-ups did he eat last year without any help and do a really good job? It was a lot in every game. And so I don't necessarily just buy that. Like he was a
you bad. Don't buy that he's an elite.
No, I don't buy
moving
that.
His feet on
I don't buy that
screens?
he's a guy who is a bad post defender, or at least what wasn't last year. And now, I mean, I don't know. It's inexplicable. It's a regression, and I understand that he maybe wasn't going to be as good as he was last year because the opposition is ramped up. But for him to go from last year to this year is. Wow.
I mean, I think there's some randomness in the equation. I mean, Oturu made some shots that he's not generally going to make.
That's not true. Because Oturu is a 35% three-point shooter. He was 1 of 2. And 13 of his 16 twos were at the rim.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, he also made some a couple of mid-range jumpers against Teske that were well-checked.
You can't.
He didn't make them last night.
So, I guess when I talk about helping... sending help for Teske. I'm not talking about every single time. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly not talking about when the guy, you know, faces him up or catches the ball at the 3-point line and, you know, either shoots or puts it on the deck. I'm just talking about when he's in the post. You know, it's hard to double on the guy when when he's, you know, when he's facing the guy. But when he's, you know, it's when he's in with his back to the basket, having a guard or, you know, a wing kind of dig down on him, that's when the opportunities really present themselves. That's when I think they really need to try to help him a little more. Not every time, but just some to give the opposition a different look. And as Tim McCormick, who talked a lot about this on the podcast this week, said, give them something to think about.
Yeah.
But, you know, make them have to think about what's going to come at them down the court, not know every single time, hey, it's one-on-one, you know, whenever I get the basketball. So let's go back to the phones, talk to Mark in Lansing. Mark, what's up?
Hey guys. I love this segment of the show. And then let me tell you, one reason I do is because I am so opposed to analytics as explaining everything, because you can cherry pick them as you want to fit whatever narrative you want to come to. I'm watching John Teske last year, and Brian, you want to suggest that he was a good defensive player based on analytics last year. If you watch these games, and you even watch the games last year, they throw the ball into the paint. One of the first things I notice when I'm watching a guy being defended by another guy is how aggressive and how much his eyes light up when he catches that ball. And whether it was Hap last year or the four or five guys this year, it doesn't really matter who they are. They're going right at him. And they're going right at him because they're not concerned at all about his ability to play defense. And they're putting up prolific numbers. And then and fortunately, the statistics bear that out to the point where to my second point. You said that Purdue immediately doubled Teske out of his post play. Well, that was easy. It's baked into Purdue. It's not baked into Michigan, which brings me to my third point. Why is it not baked into Michigan to have a counter for what's going on right now? The suggestion that we don't want to somehow impact Big Sleep's aggression or his confidence is crazy. He's getting killed. If anything, his confidence is being destroyed by virtue of the fact
that
what's going on.
That's the point. That's the point.
Yeah.
Not. I wasn't saying you affect his confidence adversely by sending help. Saying you're helping his confidence by giving him some help and you know, kind of lessening the bludgeoning that he's been taking lately.
Yeah, I also want to. Thanks, Mark. I also want to take up something that Ed says, because I believe this completely. Last year, I mean, I sit right under the basket. I watch. You know, I watch what Teske did on the hard hedge or in any hedge, soft hedge, whatever kind of hedging they were doing, and he was a miracle at it. He managed to cover the ball handler and, if necessary, cover back up against the roll guy. I mean, and he was so good at that. I've never seen anyone that size that good at it, and that's gone. And so you've taken away the thing on the court that Teske does best and put him in something where he's not quite as comfortable. And so to me, I mean, I think that was Ed's point, and I think it's right. You know, it's odd to me. I don't know what's going on in the NBA, but when the Fab Five played here, they doubled on the post like demons, and they were absolutely great at it because they had guys who could cover up at the three, and they did a great job of covering up at the three. The Fab Five, to be honest, was probably a better defensive team than they were offensive team.
All right, so Mark, here we go. You don't believe in analytics. I'm going to give you a prediction. So first of all, the reason why Juwan doesn't cover guys is to prevent three-point shots, and they've been amazing at that.
Okay, so
right.
Pause. Oh, I'm going to give you – I got the break signal like 2 minutes ago. So I'm going to give you the floor when we return. We'll start off with Ed Fang making this point. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. We are back. So, Ed, as we were into the break, you were making a point. So you have the floor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I hope Mark's still listening. But anyways, for people who are still listening, don't believe in analytics. That's fine. But the point of analytics is that it makes a prediction. We talked about Purdue, and he talked about how they would double immediately. And the numbers do bear that out, because and one of the consequences is you're going to allow three-point shots. And they are 252nd in allowing three-point shots. So that's clearly part of it. They're going to double at the expense of allowing three-pointers. They're ninth in defensive efficiency in my numbers. They're probably similar in KenPom's right now. But part of that is that they're one of the best at the rate at which other teams are making three-pointers. So they're eighth in the nation. Analytics suggest that you'll see severe regression to the mean there. So if Purdue seems like your model for a defense right now, my prediction is that they will not look like your model for defense by the end of the Big Ten season.
Okay.
Maybe. I just, all I know is this, and maybe it is just randomness, small sample size, but right now in the Big Ten, whatever's going on isn't working. I think that's fair to say. Anyone disagree with that?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
Let's go to the phone, 734-998-1050. Talk to JJ in Lincoln Park. JJ, what's up?
Well, my Mason Blue Toppers are up just because the Michigan men's swim team put a beating down. Well, it wasn't a beating, but they put a beating on Indiana over the weekend. And I want to say a special shout-out to my newest, bestest hero, Jake, because he pumps me up every day, and he's even mentioned the men's swim team. The world is a great place to be. And guess what? We're less than 24 hours from the wisdom of one John U. Bacon again on these very radio waves. God bless America. Go Blue. Woo!
Thanks a lot for the call there, JJ.
I was with him until the last part.
guys, as you look ahead to this matchup with Iowa, handicap it for me. How do you think it's gonna play out?
Well, you got to get back better on defense. They didn't do that well in the first game. Got a lot of deep post position in transition. Got to do better than that. And then you got to hit some shots. Hopefully, if Livers is back, I think they got a shot.
I don't think he's back. I think he's playing next week. So that's my guess.
Let's talk about a point real quick that you raised earlier, Brian, and that's Eli Brooks.
So Eli Brooks hit 1 of 7 shots against Minnesota. They were all open looks. And I just don't think that the gap between DDJ and Brooks on defense, which there is one, is worth it at this point. So in games against top 100 opponents, he's got like an 82-0 rating, which is not good. 0.8 points per possession. He hadn't hit a three since the Iowa game. And it's just at this point, you know, DeJulius is making more stuff happen. And he's actually been a very good on-ball defender as well. I'm not sure if he's going to be as good at chasing a guy like Stepanovich around screens. But, you know, when Minnesota was going at him, like he suffered an awful, awful blocking call.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Was that the Purdue game?
Yeah, that was Purdue. It was terrible. No respect. No respect.
I mean, he takes a forearm to the chest, and they call it on him. I'm like, all right. So, but that he was – they couldn't get around him in that game. And, you know, Purdue might not be top end, but, like, he's not a liability on defense. And I just think, like, because of the roster situation, the upshot there is that you take – 10 of his minutes and give him
sorry.
So it's not a huge difference, but like we're putting Adrian Nunez in at the end of first halves and DDJ's on the bench. Like, what? Come on now. Like, there's no on-court justification for that at this point.
Yeah, I agree. There's no justification at this moment for playing Nunez over DDJ. The one thing, you know, and Brooks is a better defender at this point than DDJ, but DDJ, I agree with Brian, has improved on defense, is a plausible defensive player. And the one nice thing is I tracked him in the last 149 minutes of his play, 3 turnovers, which is, now he doesn't have a lot of assists. He's got like 13 assists, I think, but 3 turnovers for a guy who has some responsibility to handle the ball in 149 minutes is really good.
And he's creating offense against good defenders too, so. which you got to really like.
Yeah, this is another topic Tim and I went into. His point, he asked the question, should you change the starting lineup? I would not be at all opposed to that, but if you could stop short of that and just go to him before, you know, 7 or 8 minutes. I mean, you know, go to him at the 4-minute mark, you know, at the 16-minute mark, you know, the first time out, and kind of just, as you said, take some of those minutes, divert some of those minutes to a guy that's making more things happen on the offensive end right now.
Yeah, and then the other guy who you can maybe try to get some more usage is Wagner. So in the Minnesota game, they did a couple interesting things where they posted him up. So if he gets a guy who's 6'4" on him, his crazy Gumby arms, I mean, he can't front the post. So they've been able to get him action where he catches the ball on the move, doesn't have to put the ball on the ground. Because he still doesn't have that, like, I'm a football running back thing where you just kind of tuck it in and people beat you up and you get to the rim anyway. So that's something that'll have to develop for him, and that's probably a next year project. But can they figure out ways to use his length and shooting ability and get him more looks at the basket? Because after starting out the season terrible from three, I think he's 14 of his last 32. You know, his free throw shooting is in the 90% range. He's a dead eye. So, like, what can we do to get him more involved with the offense?
What do you mentioned the phrase figure out? Can you guys figure out the Big Ten right now? Can you figure out how Michigan State goes and gets bombed by Purdue and Purdue, you know, the week before scores 37 points in a game?
42-6 is what the number is right now on home teams. Home teams are 42-6.
Yeah, but that doesn't explain 62-37 against Illinois. And then boat racing Michigan State.
Yeah. I don't know. No one has the answer to that. But I know last night Archie Miller was going crazy because the other team was getting half the foul calls. And, you know.
That guy's got a lot on his mind, man.
And Indiana, in their three games at home, shot 104 free throws to 37. 104 to 37 in three games. This is back to the old pro wrestling days. You know, for 10 years, the Big Ten gave road teams a chance. Now, I'm not so sure they really do. I mean, Michigan is 80-34 on the road in free throws.
Only two teams that are even out of the NCAA picture. So, yeah. In that circumstance, you know, home and road gets a lot more important.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't lose at home now. You lose at home now, and you're in trouble.
Yeah, no.
And Michigan, incidentally, made the very smart move of playing two road games at Rutgers. Smart. And
the game at MSG is not going to be a road game.
Well, it's at least a neutral game, right?
No.
Not in terms of fan support.
You think there'll be more Michigan fans here?
No,
very
for sure.
Much so.
Yeah, we'll see. But I don't want to play that. I'd rather play that game at Chrysler against Rutgers than at Madison Square Garden. Rutgers has turned out to be a good team. I think
the lower bowl will be more full at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
Ward's got to do something about it.
The lower bowl has been full this year.
Ward's got to do something about basketball attendance.
Well, basketball attendance is the best it's ever been this year.
Yeah, I mean, the tickets are sold, sure.
No, people are there.
Yeah.
People, I know, I'm at all the games. People are there. In the past, what you're saying is true. This year, it's not true.
I mean, you're comparing Chrysler to previous editions of Chrysler.
Correct.
I'm comparing Chrysler to Mackey.
Well, okay. That's...
Anywhere else in the league.
It's never been
that. Exactly four students.
So do something like what? Do something like what?
I don't know. Create a system where if you're not going to go to the game, you have to give your ticket back. And then the Michigan can move students into those seats. There's a lot of different things that you can...
That makes sense.
Better than us!
No!